Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Selim Kaji is a South African performer and artist. He is known for his warm, richly textured voice and his evergreen repertoire of heartfelt ballads that have enchanted both local and international audiences since his introduction into the music scene. After a stint in the UK, he returned to South Africa, and under the tutelage of vocal specialist, the late Gene Stewart, he honed his natural talent. In the early 2000s, he starred in many leading roles in musical theatre productions, such as The Sound of Music, And You Get Your Gun, and The King and I. Veteran songwriter, producer, and radio director Clive Ridgway spotted the unique quality in his voice, and together the two embarked on a journey that culminated in a record deal with international label EMI Music, resulting in the release of his debut classical crossover album, Cry for Love, in 2012. He has collaborated with the group Celtic Woman, and has also performed at the prestigious Sergio Franchi concert in Connecticut in USA. With an elegant and expressive stage presence, Selim has since gone on to produce his own orchestra concerts, performing evergreen ballads and stirring originals using his unique combination of both pop and operatic vocal styles. Up next on Celeb Savant, discussing his journey in the entertainment industry and his upcoming show Il Mondo, which he'll be performing in Johannesburg, South Africa, is Selim Kaji. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
Yeah, thanks very much for having me. I am in Cape Town, and it's a beautiful sunny day in Cape Town, and I'm well. I'm very well.
Okay, so now let's rewind. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you feel cool? You want to be in the space of singing, performing in the artist world, and how did that journey progress?
It has been a long sort of vision and visualization and a goal to sing and perform. But as a child, growing up, I didn't sing at all. I didn't even know how to sing. As a teenager, I was very quiet, very introverted. It was difficult for me to, I guess, express myself. And I still didn't know anything about singing or music at all. But I did have a creative streak in me. And I joined a local theater group to start doing some acting. And that's when I started doing some performances. And, the first time I performed in a little acting skit, it really ignited something in me. And I thought, wow, this is interesting. And it felt good. Not that it was easy or comfortable, it pushed me, but I felt within me that this is something I need to explore more and more. And then, I studied graphic design after school. And after that, I went to the UK for about a year. I've got an aunt and an uncle in the UK. And I just sort of hung around the UK for about a year doing some acting here and there, just to explore whatever I could. And I started singing a little bit with other artists on backtracks and whatever I could. And eventually I came back to South Africa, and the next phase of my music life starts when I met this teacher. And the way I met this teacher was that I was told there was going to be a lecture on singing at a college in Cape Town. I think I was about 19 or 20 years old. And the lady who spoke, who gave the lecture, she said to the audience that night, which was a profound moment in my life, she said that if you have a diaphragm, a set of lungs, and you can speak, you can actually learn to sing. And that was a pivotal moment in my life that my belief around singing changed. And that was because I didn't know that you get songs that are higher and lower and some voices are higher and lower. I didn't know anything about that at all. I just thought I couldn't sing. And then she introduced me to a singing teacher. Her name is Jean Stewart. But little did I know that Jean was an opera teacher and an ex-opera, retired opera singer. And that's when things started shifting.
So what were the next steps? So you started training with Gene, and then how did things progress from there?
I started training with Gene on the piano scales, and it was awful. I didn't enjoy it because she was training me in this big, full-voiced style of singing, of which I was not used to at all. I'm used to listening to pop singers of the time of the 80s and the 90s growing up, whether it's Michael Jackson, Robbie Williams, George Michael. That's the sound that I'm used to as a singer. And this is all this lady could do is train me in this particular style. And she pushed me in this direction. I said, this is not what I want to do. I want to have a lighter voice, a pop sounding voice. And we had this deep relationship where we would speak about life and spirituality after every lesson. And these lessons would carry on. And she became a good friend of mine. But I still said, this is not for me. And I was about to walk out. And she sort of pulled me back and she said, listen, sit down. If you let me teach you this technique, there's something in your voice that I can hear. And that not many people have in terms of the sound and the timbre, and the warmth. And just give me a chance to develop the sound within your voice. And I kind of just gave in to her belief and her vision. And she insisted that I come every single week, which I did. And the lessons were not easy because she was very militant in her approach. She would be very particular about the sound that was coming out of my voice. Not even the pitch. Sure, you need to sing on pitch and all those things. And I wasn't, my pitch improved over the years. But in terms of the sound production, that was her focus, and how to sing with the right amount of resonance. And I could eventually see results. My voice was getting stronger. I started auditioning for musical theater roles down here in Artscape, The Sound of Music, King and I, Annie Get Your Gun. And I started really enjoying those musicals, which needed that sort of traditional voice, this classical musical theater voice. And I could see where this was going and how I was improving. And she trained me for 10 years, and I met up. My paths crossed with a producer from the Cape Town School of Songwriting. He also saw something that in my voice from one of the recordings that I did. And he said, I'm going to write you a song and we're going to pitch it to some record labels, which he did. And he wrote Cry for Love, and he pitched that to EMI, of which he had a contact, and they were interested, and they signed me for a record deal in 2012. And that was another pivotal moment in my career.
Did you only release one album with them, or was that partnership and collaboration
Correct.
ongoing?
It was one album, and after the album, a year down the line, they were bought over by Universal Music,
Oh, yeah.
and everything just fell out. People changed positions. The company grew much smaller. I wasn't developed enough as an artist to be sustained. And there I was left with what happens now? What do I do now? But I decided to continue and stage my own shows. At the time, I didn't even have a show at all. I didn't even know what my sort of style was. I was still figuring that out. I think the label was trying to figure that out as well. But we didn't quite have our finger on the pulse of what it was.
Yeah.
We had some idea, but it wasn't quite on the button. But I started doing shows and concerts, and I was given the opportunity to perform my first concert at St. Eustaphius in 2012. And I hired a mini orchestra to perform with me. And the organizers thought I would perform with a backtrack or a pianist. But I guess it was part of my insecurity that I wanted to have all these musicians on stage with me.
Well, I wouldn't say insecurity. I would say more confidence, because the fact that you want to go up there with all those instruments compared to a backing track, for me, I would say more confidence than insecurity. But that's my observation.
I think also, you know, the singers in my genre with Andrea Bocelli's or Josh Groban's, all these acts or artists had orchestras behind them, and I was kind of trying to look the part as well.
Yeah, makes sense. Absolutely makes sense.
But at the same time, it was nice to have more people on the stage. It felt nice for me. And, you know, it wasn't about the money. It was about, I guess, just trying to put myself out there in the best position, sounding as best as I could, presenting something as best as I could at the time. And of course, that went really well. And then I just kept doing concerts. And yeah, I sort of pushed myself to do more and more concerts around Cape Town. And I lost quite a bit of money doing those concerts, because I was always about the quality of the performance or all this production elements and hiring sound technicians, lighting people and orchestras and all these things. At that point, it wasn't, you know, looking, it was just getting something as best as I could, a good show out there as much as I could. And I got used to performing with the orchestra from my musical theater days, where we did these big lavish productions with an orchestra, and that I enjoyed very much. And I thought I could sustain it foolishly, but it wasn't sustainable. And that's why I was losing money all the time, or breaking even, or, you know, finding a sponsor to sponsor the orchestra or the show and that sort of thing. That's changed now.
Well, that's good. So just a quick question. Are you still doing musical theater or not?
No, I'm not. I enjoyed it very much, and I wanted to do my own thing, to have creative and artistic control over my own show, what I wanted to sing, what things I wanted to do in between. So I decided I'm not going to do the musical theater any longer, but I'm going to focus on my own shows, like the singers in my genre. And that's what I did. And then I did get an invitation to perform in the United States in 2014 at the Sergio Franchi Memorial Concert to 5,000 people, which was, to me, quite a big deal and quite a wonderful experience to have had. And performing in the U.S., I was seen as the international star. I had a really good reception.
Well, that's good, yeah.
I think maybe a year later or 2 years later, I got a message from an agent in the U.K. who's seen my music video, and they were agents for the cruise ship industry. And she said, you know, she likes my voice and the song, and would I be interested in performing on a cruise ship from Europe that's coming down to Africa and South Africa? I said, okay, sure. And fortunately, I had a show that was developed over the years already. Nothing actually came off it. Nothing happened. And she said, okay, great, we'll keep you on record. It wasn't until about 4 or 5, 6 years later, they contacted me again in 2019 with a solid deal to perform on a cruise ship coming around Africa. Now, for those years in between, I was still doing shows and I still had a graphic design business as well. But at the same time, I thought, oh, this agent's interested in me performing on a cruise ship. So I began looking for another agent because I wasn't hearing back from these people.
Mm.
And I would email for the next 10 years, I would start emailing agents all over the world. And absolutely nothing happened. And then eventually in 2019, the initial agent secured the gig and the contract for me to perform my first cruise ship. And I performed it really successfully. It went on really well to mostly Americans and European audiences. And 2 weeks after that, COVID struck.
Yes.
And everything just flatlined. And my design business flatlined, singing just flatlined. I was in a bit of a panic as to what's going to happen, like everyone else was. But at the same time, I realized this is what I want to dedicate myself and my time to, you know, if I'm going to die in a week now. So I made a strong effort and focus on the music. And I went back into my emails and I started emailing agents again as we were starting to come out of COVID. And I found an agent in Florida and I eventually called them up and they said, hey, yes, we do actually have your information. And they said, thanks for calling. And then eventually they got my second cruise gig not too long after I spoke to them on the phone. And things took off from that, and I started getting more and more cruise gigs. And the cruises have been good for me because it allowed me to exercise and perform my show over and over and fine-tune it and fine-tune the stories in between, which is so important to make the show work together. That is kind of where we are now, with a lot of interesting things that happened in between from 2012 to now, like performances with singing various national anthems, the South African anthem, the Welsh anthem, the New Zealand anthem, which were all very memorable events in my career.
You've mentioned that you've refined and created the story of the show. So tell us, you got the show coming up shortly in Johannesburg at Empress Palace. So tell us what the audience can expect.
Well, I tell a lot of stories in between the songs because it's a way that I can relate to an audience outside the singing and outside the music. And I learned the art of storytelling during COVID, actually, when, you know, people weren't seeing each other. And I started creating these videos, these story-based videos for businesses and brands so that they could build trust and credibility through video by telling their founder story, and a story that's inspiring and what motivates them, what their purpose is. And I studied a bit of this art of storytelling in terms of how to structure a story, how to arc it, and how to have, you know, a villain and a hero, and create some tension and have a resolve. And I started employing those techniques in the show based on my life events and my travels throughout my career. And that's kind of the gel in between the songs. So the songs, of course, they are very romantic. The show is called Il Mondo. In fact, there's a story I tell about meeting the son of the man who wrote Il Mondo as well. And it's a little bit of a funny story. In fact, there are many funny stories. So if people enjoy the timeless classic songs, this is the show that here in South Africa, I don't think too many people are performing songs that the big romantic singers have sung in the past, and those singers are the Perry Como, the Engelbert Humperdinck, the who else? Tom Jones, Josh Groban, Andrea Bocelli. Those sort of traditional voices. And when I say traditional voices, I mean in Western pop traditional music from the 40s and 50s and 60s. There's always been a great legacy of that kind of singing in Europe and in the States. And we've all been, I've definitely been exposed to it growing up. And these are very much the songs that I had listened to as a young child growing up in my parents' home. And they, of course, listened to the music of the 50s, 60s, and the 70s. Even though, you know, my music was the pop music of the 80s and the 90s, the music I perform and I listen to then is the music that I can sing.
Salim, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message to the audiences, what would you like to say?
If you're in Johannesburg and you enjoy this kind of music, do come and see the show. But for me, it's been a journey in the music world. And to anyone else on their journey, as we all are, I think it's always important to develop a sense of self-awareness of what your strengths are, what you're good at, and what you are less good at, and zone in on where you can dial the knob and become self-aware of who you are in order to achieve a level of success and not be a fish trying to climb up a tree.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.